translation interpreted by His divine grace. According to the Vedas, there are two kinds of activities, pravritti and nivritti. Pravritti activities involve raising oneself from a lower to a higher condition of materialistic life, whereas nivritti means the cessation of material desire. Through pravritti activities, one suffers from material entanglement, but by nivritti activities, one is purified and becomes fit to enjoy eternal life, blissful life. Purport. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 16, text number 7. Pravrittim cha nivrittim cha jana na vidur asuraha. The asuras, non-devotees, cannot distinguish between pravritti and nivritti. Whatever they like, they do. Such persons think themselves independent of the strong material nature, and therefore they are irresponsible and do not care to act piously. Indeed, they do not distinguish between pious and impious activity. Bhakti, of course, does not depend on pious or impious activity. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, Text number 6. Savai pum samparo dharmo yatho bhakti radhokshaje ahaituki apriti hata yaya atma suprasidati. The supreme occupation, dharma, for all humanity, is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. Nonetheless, those who act piously have a better chance to become devotees. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvidha bhajante mam janaha sukrito juna. Chapter 7, text number 16. O Arjun, four kinds of pious men render devotional service unto me. One who takes the devotional service, even with some material motive, is considered pious. And because he has come to Krishna, he will gradually come to the stage of bhakti. Then, like Dhruva Maharaj, he will refuse to accept any material benediction from the Lord. Swamin kritarthosmin varam noyache. Therefore, even if one is materially inclined, one may take to the shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram, or Gaura and Nithai, so that he will very soon be purified of all material desires. Kshipram bhavati dharmatma shashvam chanti manigacchati. As soon as one is freed from inclinations toward pious and impious activities, he becomes a perfect candidate for returning home back to Godhead. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyau Vaishnavebhyau Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So welcome to today's class, speaking from this absolutely fantastic canto in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is extremely most relevant for individuals not raised in a community of those descendants and ancestors that have been liberated life after life after life, wherein every activity of the parents and the children and the forefathers and the grandparents are completely in line with Shastra. And therefore you find a few purports earlier, Srila Prabhupada makes the blunt statement to explain on how every activity has to be in pursuance of the Vedic injunctions, the life of a devotee and non-devotee. And therefore, for those individuals who don't come from such a respectable and highly elevated Krishna conscious entire culture, a lifestyle, not just a religious or spiritual practice, which can deter according to how other individuals react to the way we chant or to the way we talk or to the way we interact with other people, which can sometimes lead us off stray or take us to the level of committing offenses. When one is raised in a culture of values and ethics which are always in pursuance of the scriptures, it is very, very difficult to deviate. And if one does deviate, kshipram bhavati dharmatma, because such an individual has the samskaras, has the inclinations of feeling as if it is like committing suicide, one is so inclined and attached to performing what is right, righteousness completely overtakes one's entire condition. Therefore, such aspects, whereas even lying is like death. And therefore you find Lord Krishna only performed pastimes in Vrindavan for just a few years. And those pastimes are only meant to be heard and meditated upon. But for another 100 years plus, to be precise, probably about 105 years of Krishna's life, was spent excessively setting the example for every human being on how to interact in society. And therefore, Krishna Dvaipayan, the incarnation of Lord Sri Krishna himself, only such a personality was able to manifest the Mahabharata. And despite the Mahabharata being such a long text, 100,000 verses, practically impossible for any individual to assimilate what to speak of, understand and read. Therefore, Narada Muni advised Vyasa to perform the work of a commentary on the Mahabharata, wherein individuals can take the essence of the examples that Krishna set through the Mahabharata text. And therefore, at least minimal, we have 18,000 verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And within the 18,000 verses, the past few chapters are absolutely paramount for every individual in the Varanashram and outside Varanashram to understand. And therefore, we have chapters such as instructions for civilized human beings, the social order for the four ashrams and the varnas. And not surprisingly, the pravartak or the speaker of this chapter is Devarishi Narada, the individual responsible for the Srimad Bhagavatam and many other texts as well. So therefore, within this chapter here, Narada is describing an aspect within the scriptures which allows one to not only make spiritual advancement, but also take care of one's material needs as well. Now, what's interesting is that Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purports that those who are asuras, he goes to the point of using the word asura, that those who are demoniac are unable to differentiate between pravritti and nivritti. These two words are very important because these words contain so much philosophy behind the very letters. So the word vritti, so the word pravritti and nivritti are differentiated by the affix, pra and ni. Now, there is a Sanskrit law. Upasaragena dhyatvarato bhalat anyatra niyate ahara pariharavat. So in Sanskrit, certain words can change its meaning simply by a sound. Now, whereas in English, we have alphabets and letters, in Sanskrit, we have swaras, which means syllables. So every sentence, every word is nothing other than a combustion of syllables. Now, just deviating for one moment, Srila Jiva Goswami explains that Narayanat Abhyuto Yam Varnakramaha, that every sound in the Sanskrit alphabet is a manifestation of the footsteps or the dancings of the gopis. And therefore, when Lord Narayana manifested the material universe in order to ensure that what to speak of every activity, that every word should be delivering, every word should be advancing. Therefore, he chose the language of the spiritual kingdom of God, the language wherein every word is a song and every step is a dance. And therefore, by reciting the Sanskrit words itself, it delivers you. It makes you more Krishna conscious, because the Sanskrit words are not words of the material world. In fact, if we realize through the Puranas, the various languages of the world are called apabrasha. Apabrasha are deviations of the original sounds existing in the spiritual world. Therefore, bhrata becomes bhava, matra becomes mava, etc. And when words deviate, it loses potency. Therefore, the word nivritti and pravritti, despite being the exact same word, by force, balad, by force, these words have a very, very different meaning, simply by the affix of ni and pra. The word vritti, the word vrit, means focus. It means something which cannot be changed. One's constitutional position, vit. And vritti, third person singular, refers to the natural inclination that an individual has. So for example, a natural inclination of an individual would be to be happy. And when one realizes that one has to partake in spiritual practice, then one chants. Nevertheless, the vritti cannot be ignored. The vritti, i.e. is, for example, becoming hungry at a particular time. The desire to sleep. The desire to interact with individuals. So, vritti is very similar to the word dharma. Something which is very difficult to change. The word dharma and vritti only differ in the sense that dharma cannot be changed. But vritti can sometimes be changed according to one's environment, how one is raised, the values and the cultures of one's superiors. Two devotees may differ on the very same point. One devotee may be for a particular type of value, and a devotee against. And they differ according to how they were raised or samskaraha. And therefore, nivritti and parvritti are only differentiated in the sense that one is trying to stop one's natural tendency in the material life. And pra, vritti, the word pra means to go above. Whenever the word pra is used, it means to elevate. It means to go above. So the word pra has two definitions. The first definition is wherein pravritti means one is increasing. One is creating a domestic home for the application and the fulfillment and the experience of one's material desires. And the material desires can be as simple as having a home, having a plate of prasad to eat. It can actually be like that, because the Vedas do not speak of gross material desires. The gross material desires have been spoken by other saints who may be practicing Vedic culture, who have their own texts, texts which are outside of the Vedic texts, texts which are beyond the boundaries of when Krishna discussed in Bhagavad Gita, Vedanta Krit, Veda Vida Vichahan, texts which do not lead you to Krishna, texts which were not concluded or written by Krishna or compiled by Krishna. And there are many, many such texts. And those texts can sometimes be misinterpreted to become Veda. But actually they are not. It's extremely important and very, very clear. Veda scriptures are only meant to elevate one's consciousness. Therefore, pravritti, the first definition is that which allows you to experience your vritti or your natural inclination. However, the word pravritti doesn't stop there. And it's very important to note that the word pravritti also allows the understanding that when one wants to experience one's material desires, it actually elevates you. It takes you closer and closer to God. And the very beginning of pravritti, the Vedic scriptures explain, Nakaramanana prajayadane natyage naike paramrittamanashu parenanakum nihitam kuhayam vibrajadyatupashanti. Immediately the Vedas describe nakaramanana. One cannot experience one's actual inclinations of desire of profit and gain by your activities. Prajaya. One cannot experience happiness in this world by having progeny. Believe it or not, people actually think by having kids you can become happy. At least at one point that was the thought. Dhanena. Through the accumulation of wealth, for the acquisition of wealth, one cannot attain everlasting peace. Tyage naike, only by renunciation. Only by renunciation can one attain the ultimate goal of one's immediate and one's long-term goals in life. Now, how is it possible for renunciation? Because the Yajurveda in this verse explains that renunciation is wherein one allows Krishna to provide for one's needs. And how does one engage Krishna in the pravritti marg? By following what Krishna says. So if you require anna, if you require food grains, if you require cloth, vastra, these are some of the fundamental aspects that every human being is designated from birth. Vastra, anna, prajaya, i.e. progeny, partners, which includes children, gurus, and wife. There are some aspects which every individual are designated at birth, as described by Parashrishi in the Brihat Parashrahora Shastra, the father of Vyasa. Now, how does one acquire such aspects in life? By going through Krishna. And therefore, in this purport, Srila Prabhupada goes to a blatant point of describing how one does not need, fundamentally in a dormant state, by default, there is the understanding or the misconception that material activities are only gained by taking the shelter of those individuals personified for the various material activities. So for example, if one has a digestive problem or one has a health problem, then the very first person who one thinks of is the personification of that energy, Mitra or Varuna. Or if it's an environmental ecological crisis, one thinks of Indra. But these personalities are only the personification of these material energies. Therefore, in the Vedas, Krishna describes how even for the pursuit of material gain, now the material gain is not the gain which leads one away from Krishna. We are speaking of the fundamental aspects of material gain, such as peace, such as non-violence, such as foodstuff, such as water, such as just harmony. These are aspects which even are very important for a devotee to be able to focus upon Krishna. One needs an environment of like-minded people and souls. This is also a material boon, despite it being in a spiritual situation. This is the material aspects that the Vedas describe. The Vedas do not describe the gross material aspects that one that takes one away from Krishna. Otherwise, that will be a contradiction according to the author and the purpose of the Vedas as described in 1515 Bhagavad Gita, him being the goal, him being the compiler, and the knower of the Vedas. Therefore, in pravritti, one approaches Krishna even for the satisfaction of one's natural inclinations or needs to attain his feet. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada explains, one should substitute the mentality of approaching the energies of Krishna by approaching Krishna himself. And the very sentence, the living entity must get strength from Nithai God or Krishna Balaram. And by the mercy of Nithai God, there is no way, without the mercy of Nithai God, there is no way to come out of this dark well of ignorance. Srila Prabhupada is describing here, and he is emphasizing the worship of Krishna. Even to approach Krishna if one has material gain. And elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada explains that at least by approaching Krishna in this way, pravritti manifests, or one's needs are fulfilled, and at the same time, one advances further and further. Now, interestingly, the two aspects of pravritti and nivritti are focused upon the various ashrams. So, for example, in the brahmacharya ashram and the vanaprastha ashram and the sannyasa ashram, the nivritti is most important. Because nivritti means that one begins to give up one's natural inclination of acquiring material objects, which actually begins from hunger and thirst. As described by Parikshit Maharaj when he approached Shukadeva Goswami, the very first aspects that qualified him, apart from the mentality of approaching Shukadeva Goswami, was to give up hunger and thirst, which is an indication of 24 hours absorption in Krishna, the very essential needs of life. And therefore, Trishna and Bhuksha are the very two first objects that one tries to control. And obviously the next object, as Prabhupada describes in the earlier purports to this chapter, is sleep. So this is the third object. So in this way, the nivritti path very systematically describes the aspect which one needs to give up. However, I'm going to stop here upon the nivritti path, because the nivritti path is one which I have absolutely zero practice in. You'll have to ask the sannyasis and the other members of the ashrams. My focus here is on pravritti, especially because Narada, in this chapter, has already described the pravritti mark. He goes on to describe the Shraddha ceremony. He goes on to describe the worship of the forefathers. He goes on to describe the various places of pilgrimage. And even later on in this chapter, you may be bewildered to hear how Narada describes even much more detailed descriptions of pravritti. But in essence, pravritti is, in a practical sense, without philosophizing too much upon the various words, the ashram of Grihastha. As a Grihastha, one is duty-bound to provide for one's dependents, beginning with the wife. Now in the Vivaha Samskara and the other samskaras, Lord Shri Krishna, he allows a devotee to attain material perfections without asking for them. This is a very important aspect in devotional service. That without asking Krishna for the attainment of various material needs, again, only as a grihastha, one provides, Krishna provides. Because when one asks for material gain, one is immediately tied up through karma. Because the very aspect of asking binds you life after life after life. And when one does not ask, but simply repeats the prayers designated for their ashram, then Krishna provides according to what is right for you, according to what is good for you. Because sometimes in the karma bank account, you may be asking for something which may not be good for you, and you may even receive it due to your level of surrender, due to your level of devotion, due to your level of need and absolute absorption in that object. Krishna may provide. But because he provides it to you outside of your material reactions and your material scope, therefore the reaction of that has to be fulfilled in the next life. And this is very nicely described in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the first few cantos. Therefore, the grihastha, he responds to the calls of nature by reciting the prayers and the performance of devotional rites designated for the ashram. And therefore, in doing so, one acquires the material goals that are essential for the grihastha ashram. Otherwise, then there is no use being a grihastha. One should then remain a brahmacharya, or move straight onto vanaprastha or sannyasi. Now, of course, even the four ashrams are not for every varna, as described in Dharma Shastras, that only the Brahman varna takes sannyas. The Kshatriya varnas take vanaprastha. The Kshatriyas do not ever take sannyas. Therefore, you find in the Srimad Bhagavatam, even the Dhritarashtra, he took vanaprastha at the end of realizing his repeated mistakes upon the advice of Vidura. And the Vaishyas generally remain grihasthas. Shudras also just remain grihasthas. Because the sannyasa ashram, as Prabhupada describes in a few verses earlier, one has to avoid vatanshi. Or Prabhupada blankly describes with the words, eating one's vomit. That's actually what the word vatanshi means. Because as a sannyas, going back is like going back to the level which you started off. And therefore Prabhupada describes that. And how is this avoided? By ensuring that level of sannyas is only awarded to those who are already spiritually perfected from practically birth. There's an argument. Is a leader born or created? I'll let you decide. It's very, very clear from the Vedas in terms of which one is correct. However, in the path of pravritti, which is the focus of this chapter, one responds for their needs by the performance of devotional rites, beginning with the samskara. Now, the samskaras are not just rituals. It's extremely important to mention. For example, how does one pray? How does one pray in one's grihastha ashram for harmony? The vivaha samskara elaborates again and again and again and again and again that immediately, prajapati vishnu devata kam, the ardhangani, the better half of the union, sorry lads, the better half of the union, or the female, is immediately seen as only to be a representative of God. Now, it's not only seen, but there is a vow taken to see the female as representative of God. Prajapati, first, she is the wife of Lord Krishna. She is then secondly my wife. Now, the Riga Veda, the seventh mandala, describes at least three people between the husband and God. Soma, Gandharva and Agni. So the husband is the fourth person who is in charge of the wife, who is responsible for the wife. And in this way, that particular samskara tries to give the impression to the husband of seeing one's wife as sacred. And therefore in the Dharma Shastra, the moment that sanctity is removed within the relationship, then diseases, violence, curfews, everything which comes in the restriction of life or the performance of one's duties enter into one's doorstep. Because the wife is seen to be representative of God, and if one doesn't interact with the wife as one interacts with a deity, therefore, all of these negative vibrations come in. And this is actually a duty, unfortunately, the biting tongue, as the Vishnu Dharma Shastra describes, the biting tongue of the husband, because he has to tolerate. And through toleration, he gains ethics, he gains morals, he gains virtues. And therefore, in this way, in the Vivaha Samskara, the entire psychology between a husband and wife are completely, very nicely described. And through this stage of pravritti, the husband, while trying to see the wife as an extension of God and practicing in his very ashram in this way, he gains advancement. Because why? The very next person is more vulnerable. And who is that? The children. Therefore, as Prabhupada describes repeatedly, at least about 85 times in the Srimad Bhagavatam, through the Garbhadhan, in fact, in the very next few verses, he describes that as well, through the words Nishek. Nishek means the scattering of the energy of God in the womb of the female, or the wife, Nishek. And this is described, you'd read in the next few verses, probably in a verse, about 3 verses time. And therefore, the prayer which the husband recites isn't just, may I have a child, but he's asking for a representative of God. So again, what is the husband doing in the Grihastha Ashram? He is interacting directly with the energy of Krishna, i.e. through the wife. And secondly, through the most vulnerable aspects in his life, children. He prays, Vishnu Yonim Kalpayatu. Not me. May Lord Krishna contemplate progeny. Imagine how beautiful this ashram is. That the husband is being asked, do not contemplate progeny. Let Krishna contemplate progeny. Let him do the work. Vishnu Yonim Kalpayatu. Toshta Rupani Vimshatu. Rather than a child being the extension of the husband or the father, or even of the parents, let the child be formed by Tvashta, the image of Krishna, who gives rise to everybody, as in the female and the male body. Shishirada Kukunada Bhagwana ki jai, Sitar Makshmahanamana ki jai. Asinchatu Prajapati Dhata, that may the soul be descended through the hands of Prajapati, or the supreme father, Krishna. Garbham Dadatu Te. And therefore, may the female be conceived in this way. So this is the prayer that the Grihastha recites at the very moment before union, before Sangha. And now Gopabhatta Goswami, on the advice of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he goes on to describe about the mentality and the focus which involves, interestingly, not devotional practice, but the diet, the lifestyle, the mentality, the material position, the advancement of post children. All of these aspects, once they are discussed and understood, then the individuals are qualified for invoking the presence of God in the form of a child. And then what happens from that moment? The father is now given a child, and it's very easy for the parents to see the child as their own children. And the very first, as the Dharmashastra describe, the very first indication of the parents seeing the children as their own children are when the parents start shouting and screaming and telling the children off. Because immediately as soon as you do that, you offend God. Immediately. Therefore, Dharmashastra described that at least once a month, at least every few weeks, parents, now while the children are sleeping, not while awake, should bow down, touch the feet of the children and offer forgiveness. Because a child is by nature naughty. A child is by nature, you can tell I'm a parent, right? A child is by nature inclined to upset and do the wrong thing. However, because the child is a manifestation of Krishna's energy, therefore, every time you deal with that child, your bank account is being hit karmically. Therefore, the Shastra describe that even though one raises one's children, you should never forget this indication. And to further, now understand, this is the pravritti marg. This is a very serious marg, wherein one is fulfilling one's material needs by advancing simultaneously. And I'm trying to give some examples on how the very natural obstacles which come in one's life in the Grihastha Ashram, because this entire marg is only for Grihasthas, it is not for the other ashrams. For them, it's always nivritti, nivritti, nivritti. Not needed, not needed, not needed. But in pravritti, needed, needed, needed. So therefore, it's very, very opposite. Then what happens to the father? The father now, he starts to form a deity. He starts to act as a shilpi. He acts as a carver to carve a deity of God. And how does he do that? Upon the form of the child. Therefore, the moment when the child appears from the womb, immediately, he invokes the presence of God over the child and receives the child in a way to offer oblations and propitiation of Krishna in terms of thankfulness. And therefore, the various post-samskaras begin to formulate the form of God over the child. And therefore, one at a time, every form, every aspect, the moment the child first places its bottom upon the ground, immediately, may Lord Varaha protect. Tie a thread around the waist of the child, Kudakati Sutra, and let that child now forever be seen as the symbol of the earth, the symbol of wholesome, the symbol of solidarity, the symbol of God. And the moment the child begins to eat, may the child now manifest the full form of its soul through the pranavayu, by offering the annaprashna. And through the pravritti marg later on, the child's body is consecrated as a temple by the establishment of the shika through the churakarana, wherein the prayers are used, wherein Krishna himself is creating the churakarana. Kshurena, Damshtra, the teeth of Vishnu are creating the churamani, or the shika. And in this way, finally, the father bestows upon the child the sacred thread. And having performed the ceremony of the Upanayana, the child is now a fully functional representation of God. And that's when the father is really going to feel bad for performing all of the negative aspects upon the child, when they see how advanced the child is. And what happens to the impression of the mother and father? They are now practicing to be with God. They are now practicing to be with the child. And the child reciprocates. Mata Gayatri Pita Chari Uchate. The child is raised in such a way to see the mother and father as extensions of God. And when this practice of Krishna consciousness, of the culture, is first and foremost within the home of the Grihastha, then it extends out to the temple, then it extends out to the monastery, then it extends out to the altar, then it extends out to the community, and only then does it extend out to the universe. Otherwise, disharmony at home very easily infiltrates our environment at work, within the temple, within the monastery, and of course the community. Therefore, for a Grihastha, like this has to explain, it is a very, it's like continuously biting the tongue. It is very important for the mother and the father in the pravritti marg to perform every material activity by approaching Krishna. And by approaching Krishna, one gradually makes advancement. Now, the pravritti marg, although it is at many, many times not recommended, the reason, and even Prabhupada explained that the Krishna consciousness movement is primarily there to push the nivritti marg. And that is because the nivritti marg is ultimately going to be the attainment of the pravritti marg, i.e. when one now fully realizes and experiences one's material gain through the Grihastha ashram, then one naturally renounces. And therefore, in fact, it is recommended that the guru, the vanaprastha, and the sannyas first go for the Grihastha ashram. Because when you go for the Grihastha ashram, you then acquire something which no other ashram can acquire. Wisdom. And wisdom is gained through experience. Very important. Wisdom is gained from experience, otherwise experience relies upon the experience of an external individual. An experience which relies upon the experience of an external individual is always futile. It is always temporary. It is not really vijnana. And therefore, when a Grihastha experiences through his ashram, let's just say 25 years for argument's sake, from the years of 25 to 50, then the Grihastha very easily renounces, because they see all of the material aspects and the problems which come with the pravritti marg. And that's also very important to know. For example, on a practical note, one requires a home, and the way the financial institutions are established globally, it is practically impossible to purchase a home without a mortgage. And what does a mortgage do? It ties you down. Now, I can tell you all about this, because I do this 5 days a week. But what happens then? The father and the mother now struggle to keep up with repayments. And if you don't repay, then you're penalized for arrears. And what happens if you have arrears? It hits your record. What happens if it hits your record? You have no credit liability. What happens if you have no credit liability? You have no position in society. You're literally socially dead. Therefore, the pravritti marg, it's very, very easy to be materially entangled within the environment, especially in which we're currently living in. It's just the nature of material world. And in fact, just for your information, taxes are actually propounded in the Vedic scriptures as well. Gara was an aspect which ensured that the entire Varnashram and the entire society flourished. However, the word gara, or taxes in the Vedic situation, are somewhat different. It is not based upon how much you earn. It is based upon your varna and the ashram. And of course, taxes based upon varna and the ashram are, not surprisingly, trying to encourage individuals to become brahmanas. Because brahmanas are very happily, you'll be very pleased to know, exempt from taxes. To a certain degree. Anyway, moving on from taxes. Actually, I can't. I should. Within the Varnashram system, As soon as one performs the pravritti marg, in order to ensure that one is not entangled, one immediately looks towards the other ashrams. And when you look towards the other ashrams, you perform your duties within your ashram in such a way wherein one is constantly detached. Therefore, if we come back to the very first verse quoted, Nakaramanana Pratyadhanena, that and only Thyagenaike, only for renunciation can one actually attain these virtues, then one understands how one renounces. One renounces by focusing upon the next ashram. When you focus upon the next ashram, then very naturally, every activity, even having progeny, even running a mortgage, even owning a home, one remains detached. But detachment doesn't mean that one is now careless. Because if you're careless, you will get punished. And sometimes, even the states act on behalf of God, believe it or not. That's how we should see it. You know, we should actually see the queen and the king as manifestations of God, even though they might be following all the principles. It's just the virtue and the mentality that then molds the character of the individual is positive, it's not negative. And sometimes that helps to kind of harmonize and enter into community and become a part of the community rather than always against. Nevertheless, in the pravritti marg, when one aspires for vanaprastha, one performs one's duty as an obligation. And therefore, in the previous verses, all of the various manifestations of the pravritti marg, i.e. for the shraddha ceremony, the invitation of brahmanas, and offering agnihotra, are again only performed as obligation. And when one performs activities as obligation, then it's very easy to renounce, because that is the sole purpose. And the wife also acts in such a way. And therefore, the grihastha who acts in such a way can then become vanaprastha. Now, vanaprastha is not an immature stage. It is no good being a vanaprastha while still having duties unfulfilled. Because then, one is then unable to take sannyas. And sannyas is nothing other than the full focus and mentality of every grihastha husband. The entire grihastha ashram is only meant to lead one onto sannyas. And therefore, every grihastha, according to the vanaprastha situation, becomes a sannyasi. There is no path away. In fact, in the ancient cultures, I'm talking about the cultures in India, if a grihastha was to remain like that when they're 70, 80, 90 years old, they will be heavily chastised, heavily ridiculed. In fact, you're exempt from my Christmas cards. That is how one is actually, you know, seen. Because why? Society pressurizes by activity. Society pressurizes through one's nature to advance individuals. So therefore, when one makes a mistake, despite the mistake being forgiven, if the community, if the individual, if the society all acts on their part. Now, it doesn't mean that one completely ridicules and isolates the individual who's made a mistake. But one pressurizes the individual to do two things. Now, these two things sometimes go against what is pushed in Vaishnava culture. Okay? In Vaishnava culture, we push to offer obeisances and to ask for forgiveness. However, that's incomplete. Because the forgiveness which comes without understanding one's mistake is a tick box exercise. Okay? I've done my job. I've made a mistake and I've said I'm sorry. It's a tick box exercise. It is not actually asking for forgiveness. Forgiveness is where one addresses the issue. Now, you address the issue without being emotionally attached, because that's when clashes occur. So how do you address the issue without being emotionally attached? By being honest. Satyam vada. Dharmam chara. Every person makes mistakes to perfect themselves. Therefore, when one makes a mistake, the shastra explain, the very first thing is to do prayaschita, or atonement. And how does one atone? By addressing the issue. By addressing the issue of somebody that can help you with the issue. And then every other individual acts in such a way so as not to promote the mistake. It's very important. Every person connected to an individual who has made a mistake is penalized to the extent in which they promote that mistake, either by befriending or continuing to be silent. Sometimes, you know, the middle route is recommended, wherein one is neither on that side or that side. Unfortunately, it's impractical. It's actually really impractical, because even being in the middle, as you discuss in the Mahabharata, generally the middle means you take the negative side, unfortunately. The left-hand side is described. By being in the middle, you take the negative side. It's very important. Therefore, one is obliged, as long as one has relationships, one has friendships, one is part of a community, one is obliged to discriminate. Now, the discrimination doesn't have to be negative. The discrimination can be constructive and positive. You maintain your friendship. You maintain your relationship. But you address the issue. And if you can imagine, if every individual plays their part in addressing the issue and trying to make the person aware of the mistake, then what happens is the society flourishes. And individuals are then more aware of their negativities. And that is when individuals can then perform bodhicitta or atonement. I truly am sorry for mistakenly performing A, B, and C. And with that mentality, when one then asks for forgiveness and does all the tick box exercises, i.e. bowing down, etc., etc., then that's meaningful. And the Mahabharata is full of this. You will find throughout the Mahabharata, not one aspect. Now, when I say the Mahabharata, I mean the pastimes of Krishna. Okay? Written by Krishna. You find not one aspect where Krishna ignored. Krishna addressed every problem, every issue. He brought families that were being broken together. Now, Draupadi, as an example, was a fiery person. In fact, she was so fiery that one of her names are Krishna, because she was very, very dark. She was that fiery. Yagyaseni. She came manifested from a yagya. Can you imagine how she felt when her five husbands, headed by Yudhishthir, all did not support her at the time when she was being disrobed? You think she was like, oh, it's okay. It's just my husband. It's fine. I forgive him. Absolutely not. She was fiery. She was ready to break her vows. The vows of Sakasa Patipati Bhava. To live together for life. Sakyam te gameyam. In happiness and distress. Sakyam te ma yoshaha. No separation. So what did Krishna do? Krishna came to the scene. He actually appeared, physically manifested. And he tried to bring Draupadi and the Pandavas back together again. Draupadi still maintained her disappointment towards her husbands. And therefore Krishna asked Draupadi to open her mouth and request benedictions. Because when you request benedictions, it now tames you temporarily. Now, as we all know, the benedictions that Draupadi requested are generally not practiced by females. You know? The chest of Dushasan, the slaving of the blood of Dushasan upon the hair of Draupadi, the breaking of the fires of Duryodhan, the massacre of Karna. But nevertheless, I'm trying to give an example about the nature of Draupadi. Still, even in that situation, Krishna appeared to try to mend things by addressing the issue. He never ignored the issue. But nowadays, it's sometimes difficult to try to address an issue without being emotionally attached. And therefore, in the Pravritti Marg, all of these descriptions are very, very clearly described on how to deal with issues, on how to follow one's protocol. And when one follows the protocol, both in raising progeny, in interacting with the wife, in interacting with society, that only then does the Pravritti Marg take you to the stage of Nivritti, which is the ultimate stage that one has to achieve, one has to practice in order to flourish in one's devotional pursuits towards Krishna. Because it is by nature that one will ask for material boons. It is by nature that one needs material comfort, that one needs peace. And if one expects that others will give that to them, it is very, very difficult. Therefore, the phrase is used, Asha Dukasya Karanam. Even hope breeds misery. Therefore, the Pravritti Marg propounds, if one is honest, if one requires material comfort in order to perform their devotional activities, one should only approach Krishna and pray to Krishna in his own words. And by doing so, one is freed from material entanglements and one is able to attain the Nivritti stage. Thank you very much. I think I've covered the purport in the best way I can. Are there any comments or questions that any devotees have?